Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Great and Terrible AHS. We're here for a special episode, and by that I mean it's back to the murder house, baby. That's right. There's no new culture. We're just repeating the same shit again. Hold that, and welcome in. And I'm joined, as always, by Miss Shadow Lovely and Slow Beef. Hey, what's good, gang?
Yo.
Hello.
Yo, it's We're Avengers Endgame, but American Horror Story style, baby. Or Infinity War, I guess. Whatever. The one where they all get together.
Yeah. This episode's insufferable. I'm going to tell everyone in advance, this is like going to be a two-parter for sure. And we're not going to get to the second part today, which is like a little sad because actual new record of how mad the show made me, which is like incredible. I didn't think it could be done at this point, but alas, poor Yorick, they made me more angry.
Just
to get right into it. That's right, baby. It opens up with them going to Murder House, and it was Chibis and Madison going out to go house shopping.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was like set up in the last episode, in case you guys have forgotten between then and now. That was set up in the last episode because like Cordelia was like, I have bad vibes. Madison, go to this house that I know about for some reason and seem to think is where Michael came from. That's my biggest thing, is Cordelia sent Madison here, and we're going to find out that, like, yeah, this house is extremely tied to Michael Langdon. But, like, why? That seems like a lot of info for Cordelia to have as of, like, an hour before her being like, we don't fucking know a goddamn thing about this guy. Holy shit. I have to bait him into reviving my other witches so that we can beat him, because holy shit, we have no idea what his deal is. It's like, well, you seem to have, like, a little bit of a grasp on what his deal is. You know he came from Murder House, and you're, like, aware of Murder House, I guess.
Yeah.
Mm. Very cool. I will say, to this episode's credit, I think this is a highlight of the episode. This is the shortest opening sequence of this show I've ever seen, ever, in the history of this show.
It's like an appropriate length.
Yeah.
It's like it sets up what the episode is going to be about, has a cute interaction, and has a couple characters kind of look at each other and be like, oh, brother, what are we getting into today? And then it does the opening scene. It's great.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
Can I just say, this whole episode, spoilers, I guess, this whole episode is like exclusively going to be a Behold and Madison episode. There is no of the other main cast members featured. I kind of like that. I wish they had more episodes. I wish the whole show was about Behold and Madison solving ghost crimes. I think that would be infinitely more interesting than what's going on. Maybe that's a hot take.
They pick the two characters with character. Like, they pick the two characters that, like, have the most energy when they interact with the environment and setting around them. Like, so many other people are either just, like, very cold and observational. Like, anytime Cordelia runs into something, she just goes, I know what that is. Like, that's all she fucking does.
Right.
Me all the time.
Half the other Warlock brothers are just like, I don't know what that is. That's scary. Or just like, I hate witches. And that's, like, their whole deal.
That's the thing. I was kind of gonna say, like, honestly, the bar is really friggin' low, so it's like, my two favorite characters, aka two of the only good ones, you know?
Yeah.
Everybody else is, like, recycled, which I guess Madison is.
Not
too,
even but good, just interesting, because that was the Michael problem for the first three episodes of this season, which was a different show, basically.
Right.
Was, like, everybody else was so boring and unlikable that when Michael shows up and starts being a little goblin, it's like, well, this guy kicks ass in comparison to everybody else. This guy's fucking sick. Like, I want to see more of this little fella. See what he's getting up to. Yeah.
Right.
So much of the cast of this show and of this season, not the cast, not the actors and the actresses, obviously they're fantastic, but the writing for the characters in this show, so much of it fails a test that I first heard about discussing the Star Wars prequels, which is, what can you tell me about this character? You're not allowed to say what kind of clothing they're wearing or what their job is.
Oh, yeah.
And And that immediately, like, fails out, like, 90% of characters in the Star Wars prequels. And I'm thinking about it, and it fails, like, a really high number of the characters in this season so far.
Yeah.
Like, of the pre, you know, before we killed everybody and rebooted the season on episode 4 or whatever, that was, like, an entire bunker full of people who had a job and clothes and nothing else. And I feel like we're not too far off, man. I gotta be real. There's a lot of people in this group that I'm just like, is which? Where's which stuff? Has personality? Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
Madison's like snippy, but at least that's like something to work with.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I'm also find it like a little annoying because like they clearly kind of recycled Coco as like Madison 2.0. They were like, we need like a vapid famous person to also be a witch. So it's interesting.
It's like, but the thing is that Madison is way more interesting because she's kind of shrewd, whereas Coco is just strictly comic relief, you know?
Yeah.
Like, and
I don't know. I guess it that also, like, this is going to sound like me waxing poetic about season 3. I promise that's not what's happening. There is a part of me that, even though this is supposed to be a fucking anthology, I can't unwatch Coven. So I have seen Coven. So I do have preconceived notions about these characters that we are, quote unquote, meeting for the first time because it's an anthology. Mm-hmm. And that is that Madison, though she got real insufferable towards the end, had like the most like nuanced and like depth having backstory and like characterization out of like any of the other characters in Coven. Like Madison had like an arc, and she had like a revenge arc, and she had like real trauma and stakes.
I
can't unlearn that about this character. So she already has that doing a lot of heavy lifting. But if we had not seen Coven, this would be like confusing. Her character, I think, would be quite. That's a big problem with this season. Is like if you didn't watch the other seasons, like Slowbeef keeps saying, it's like the Avengers Endgame or the Civil War or whatever. Any of those.
Infinity.
The thing about those is you can, in theory, not watch any of the external movies and still watch the Avengers, like just the Avengers movies, and understand what's going on. Because the characters are strong.
I did that, actually. Like, my cousin got really pissed at me because the Marvel movie order I saw was Doctor Strange and then Infinity War and Endgame. And, like, he's like, you ruined it for yourself. Like, well, I'm like, I'm not going to watch 20 movies because I waited this. Like, I didn't watch any of them until everyone was talking about Infinity War. I'm like, oh, I want to see what they're talking about. And I had seen Doctor Strange on a plane. But, you know, but you're right, because having done that, like, besides having a vague notion of who the characters are from comic books, you know, like, you have an idea of what's happening, and they're, like, written well enough that you're like, oh, I get what Tony Stark's supposed to be here, and I get what Chris, you know what I mean? Like, you get an idea of who all the characters are and their relationships by how they treat each other.
And the individual characters are also, like, very strong and very signposty in a lot of ways, and you, like, get to have safe default assumptions of, like, even if you don't know who Captain America is, you can figure out pretty quickly, right? Like, you can get a feel for this dude pretty fast. I feel like Witch, who has gone through assault and had character growth through that, but also used to be a celebrity and has some weird hang-ups about not always being recognized. See what I mean, though? Yeah. There's, like, a lot more going on. It's, like, a little hard to pick up on as opposed to just, like, Captain America. He's that guy.
My issue with Madison is I feel like she's a nuanced character, but the framework that she's in, a.k.a. the broader story, doesn't support it, you know? Like, Coven is just too, like, simple for what she's been through and the things she does. And in, like, a much better story, she's, like, a really interesting character. But here it's, like, she's just kind of all over the place. Not because she's necessarily bad, because there's just not a lot for her to do or grow with outside of events that have happened. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, so, yeah.
I think that actually touches on, I think, like, what I would consider to be a good metric of, like, a really good character. I'm not going to go as far as to say that Madison Montgomery is a really good character by, like, the grand scale of things and fiction. But, like, judging it by the idea of, would I watch a show that's just about this character? If the answer is yes, then that means that character is interesting enough to be considered like a good character.
Yeah.
If the answer is like no, not unless they were like part of a bigger cast or something. Like I wouldn't watch a show just about them. I feel like they don't add up, but I think that's also why I said like Behold, though we don't know enough about Behold, he has such a like a very specific personality and he has such a presence that like you can infer a lot about him, and like just even his little interactions, like just the things that he says, they're a little bit like they're not as shallow as just like NPC one being like, well, we need to learn how to do magic so we can have the boy supreme. Like he has a little like personality in all the things that he says. It sounds like a real like character speaking versus like someone reading lines that a character would say.
Mm-hmm.
And him, who I would consider to be probably the strongest of the warlocks as far as acting and performance goes.
Easily.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
And then Madison.
Yeah, it's not particularly close.
Yeah, it's not even close. And then Madison, who like is definitely one of the stronger of the Coven cast. I don't know if I would go as far as, because I'm a Misty Day stan. I have to vouch for my girl Misty, but like she's pretty close. And I think Queenie's also very strong,
Liz,
as a character.
To give you an idea of how low my opinion is on most of the character writing of most of the witches, when we have like a Discord, we send each other notes in and all that stuff about the show. I misnamed Zoe 3 times before getting her name correct. Mm-hmm. I got her mixed up with Violet, who is a different character played by the same actress, and Ruby, who is a different character played by a different actress but fulfills the same role as Violet but gay. And I just like I could not keep them straight. Like Zoe is so nothing, it's unbelievable, and that is ostensibly like the main character of fucking
God. What how bad the American Horror Story characters are. When you mention Ruby, I genuinely can't tell if you're talking about a different season and I've forgotten or something different altogether. Like
No, there were
stories.
Two characters that it was Ruby and Scarlet.
Oh yeah, okay.
Stories.
Yeah.
Stories. And I remember because it always pissed me off to no end that they had two characters who did almost the exact same shit named Scarlet and Violet, and I was just like, Pokemon ass. I can't believe this.
They were literally like, what if we gender swapped Tate Langdon and it was actually lesbians this time and we named the girl Ruby instead of Violet? What would that be? Would that be anything? And we're like, no. No, Ryan Murphy and Brad Fulchick, please stop
Rubber
making
Woo
these.
Rubber Woo Man! Woo Man! Is this anything?
Wow, so true, King.
Whoa, man. I got it, everybody. Hell yeah.
Oh, my God. I fucking forgot that
this
was the
name of
the
episode. This whole thing smacks a gender.
They love doing these like gender swaps, like their Tumblr posts in like 2016.
Wait till Murder House season 4 next season. Like, just keep returning there. Yay.
Also, we haven't brought it up a lot. It does feel very strange to me that they have framed the whole witches versus warlocks thing as like a very traditional gender role back and forth kind of thing of, you know, like men trying to be dominant and this, that, the other. And like that's fine. You can have that story. It's very weird that they have the men in that case like not be traditional gender roley at all, right? Like Chipley is not like a powerful straight man who's enforcing the rules or whatever, right? Like he does not come off like that, which is like what you would want as the foil to the witches, right?
Right, yeah.
Yeah. But they did that kind of already in Coven parentheses like real with the witch hunters. They were like, what if boys witch hunters and girls witch, then what? Checkmate atheists.
But they also kind of, remember they had the one witch on the council who was a guy, remember? So it's like not even that, you know? Like, I don't know what the fuck they're doing, basically. And I don't think they do either. So.
They love Tumblr and Wattpad. They're just huge fans. And so they're just like, that's where their source material comes from. So they're using the framework of that. It's amazing we haven't had like Omegaverse shit in American Horror Story yet. Like, I feel like we're like one season away from that, like truly.
I was like, what was the term that that I said passively and had no idea what it meant that like sent you into space?
Nodding.
Are they gonna add nodding to
American Horror Story? Nodding, season 14. I hate this.
So yeah, Chibis and Madison are at the realtor's office and they are trying to buy Murder House. Pretending to be a couple, which it's kind of funny how they're like trying to play it back and forth, and like both of them are clearly a little uncomfortable with the situation. The realtor goes to sell them the house and does something pretty crazy where he's just like, "Oh yeah, by the way, legally I have to tell you, everyone died who was there like five times. You really don't want to buy this house. It's crazy that you're even asking." Like, it's a wild sentiment for a realtor to have as well, because like, it's not free to like own an unsold house or whatever. Like, there are costs associated with that, and like, more importantly, he would just be wanting to get rid of this thing, right? Like, I'm sure there might be some level of like you have to legally disclose stuff, but you definitely don't have to be like, "It was like really scary the way everyone got killed in that house too." Like,
and they didn't just die. It was so not liable.
It was like uncool the way they died, and like very scary. So we're not legally liable, which is another crazy thing to say, that we're not legally liable if you die in the house, because like, that's standard.
Yeah,
that's usually how that works. Like, if I die in my house, I like, my realtor isn't on the hook for it. That's crazy.
That'd be a really funny rule. That would be a really, really funny rule.
Well, I guess the problem is like, maybe so many people have died, they just have like a little thing with Los Angeles. Like, all right, look, you don't have to pay property taxes, but you gotta tell people they're gonna fucking die if they buy your house. All right, that's just the only like this is gonna work. Like, oh, all right.
Like, come on, man, don't be a dick. You gotta at least like tell them. You can tell them after they sign the paperwork, which is what this realtor does. Right. But you do have to like tell them, or else you're an asshole. Like, come on, work
with us.
It's
funny because like 1408, that the movie like the book handle that pretty well, you know, and this one they're just like, I don't know, the realtor probably has to say they'll like die or something, I don't know, you know, like just everything's so fucking phoned in, like it, but
yeah, he's lucky that they really want to buy the house, because they do, obviously. And Behold's like, yeah, we'll just burn some sage, it's fine, or whatever. And then it immediately cuts to them walking up to the house, and Madison calls it a shithole. And then that's the opening sequence. It's like 18 seconds long. It's literally like the fastest opening sequence I've ever seen for this television show.
Wild to call it a shithole. It's like a pretty nice place. Like, at worst, looks like a historical building. Like, as the big fucking nerd who has gone all around his city looking at historical buildings and stuff, yeah, no, this is just like a nice little stop I'd like take a couple pictures at and be like, oh, what was the history of this place? That kind of thing. Definitely not somewhere I would run up and go, shithole. All stained glass, garbage.
Well, that's the problem.
Oh, is that mahogany? Gross.
They
want
it.
Oh, it's so rich and deep and expensive. Trash.
It's like when they want the joke so bad, but it doesn't work, you know? So they just, like, go with it. So it's like, you know,
they just wrote a shithole, and then we're like, oh, crap, it's not a shithole. We forgot.
It's like, well, Madison would think she's a shithole because she's so vapid, you know, and even though it's a nice house. And that's what we're saying about our season one, you know? It's almost like that meta joke when, like, a writer or, like, an actor playing a writer sees the real writer's work, and he's like, I heard this guy stinks, wink to the camera, you know, but like lazier, because it's just like, our house sucks, right, everybody? Haha. And, you know.
Oh, they're going to do so much of that this episode, and it's going to annoy
it's
me.
It's
going to
be so
every
bad.
Time.
It's
going to
be so bad. They want to be in on the joke. They love it.
Mm-hmm. So, they go into the house, and Behold tries to open the door with magic, and it just doesn't work. And they're like, oh, no, I don't have
the gate
powers.
Right, the gate outside works. He just, like, force opens it for some reason, but then the door doesn't. Just, I guess, just to quickly show you, like, yeah, see? There are a little bit of risk here, you know, but I don't think
it
works.
Sometimes a door won't open.
Yep.
Is this a monster house situation? Because that's kind of how they're treating it, is, like, that the house itself is, like, alive and housing people inside of it. But then later another character will just be like, no, it's just on a portal to hell. And I'm like, then why does the house have sentience then?
Also, like, yeah, it's not really a murder house then at all, really. It's just sort of like, you know, just a place near a murder gate, I guess, you know, but.
Murder house
so
is such a fucking
So, Behold walks
name.
In.
It is.
Yeah, they walk inside, they notice it's empty, but it does look like someone still lives there, like there are signs of stuff moving around, not dust waiting on all sorts of things. Behold mentions, like, ooh, it feels really bad in here, the psychic energy is so crazy in here, which, like, motherfucker, are you a mage or are you a psychic? These are different. These are different. Come on now. But he just says, you know, like, oh, we should go clubbing instead. And Madison replies with, oh, if I was a bit younger, I would call my coke dealer and we'd be out of here today. But I'm on my third chance at life and I'm out of here. Oh, yeah. He also, Chablis just says at some point, like, oh, this place is so terrible. It's like the nastiest place in the world. It's got to be more fucked up and evil than hell in here. And Madison goes, no, hell's way worse, which is like a crazy thing to say because her hell was not worse.
No,
it was explicitly not worse than this. Chablis makes a quick reference when she says, you know, oh, it's my third chance as life. And he hits her with, don't forget who gave you that chance. Because, like, he both is, and this is a confusing thing that this episode does. Chablis is, like, on the side of Michael Langdon and wants Michael Langdon to be successful and, like, the supreme warlock and all of that. But he also doesn't trust Michael Langdon at all and wants his downfall immediately. And the writers cannot decide which of these two is the case. And he will switch multiple times per scene. It's very frustrating. So in this scene, he is trying to be very pro Mike Langdon and be like, remember, we're here to prove that he can be the supreme because it's good. And it's stupid. It's dumb.
Wait, why are they? Oh, they're here to find out more about him, right? That's right. I actually forgot even what the hell they were doing for a minute.
You're right. Yeah, it's easy because there's no reason that they would have the information that Michael came from here. And Cordelia didn't fucking tell them that, apparently, because when they find out, they are equally surprised. Chablis then asks point blank, do you really think Michael is evil? And she just hits him with a, I don't know, but Cordelia sent us out here, so, like, fucking, maybe. They decide they're going to set up a little seance because they feel like maybe there's ghosts abound and they could talk to them. They do this thing that's, like, really common in media rituals that I personally find annoying where they just, like, say one kind of bad Latin phrase like four times and they just start screaming it by the end of it where they're just like, penisectomy, penisectomy, penisectomy. And like, that's the spell. And like, I just disagree with that as a structure. Like if I was a ghost and someone came into my house and was just like, tie, 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 tie. Like I wouldn't think they're being respectful and like want to have a cool discussion with me, you know?
Yeah, like is the implication that ghosts are like hard of hearing? Like do you need to be louder?
No, you have to annoy them into appearing because you're just like, I'm not coming out. Oh my God, I have to shut this guy up. That's all it is.
Find this fucking guy. Yeah.
I don't speak Latin. What?
What? I died in 1997. Why would I speak Latin?
Oh my God.
So, They do their seance and Madison just has a moment of like Michael's family died here, which like okay, I guess maybe
sure,
I guess. And then yeah, they're having a moment of like, oh well, did the seance work? And then a nurse ghost walks by in the hallway to jump scare him. And yeah, the whole announces that the seance was successful, not by saying like, oh yeah, it works, or like, you tell me, or like, you know, something witty. He just goes, we're in. Like they just like snuck into a VIP lounge or like hacked into a computer.
That's how you get past the spiritual firewall.
He does the hacker voice, I'm in, but like unironically.
God, So they walk back out, and as they're like at the top of the stairs, Madison has like a freak out moment because there are just like two children who are on fire walking down the stairs, which I'll be honest, after everything Madison's been through and like being to hell twice, I have to imagine her response would realistically be something more like, huh, that's weird.
Like, no, you don't, like, you don't understand. Her negative reaction is because they're children, not because they're ghosts. She just doesn't like kids.
But it's still, it totally undermines the thing, too. It's like, I've been to hell. Like, oh my God, a burning kid. Jesus Christ. Like, wow. Yeah, all right. I guess you got in the hell light or something, you know, but...
Also, the rest of this episode turns into, like, you know how at the end of old Pokemon episodes, they'd do, like, the rap and they'd say all the names of all the different Pokemon?
Articuno, Arcanine, yeah, exactly, yeah.
That's what the rest of this episode feels like, because it's like, oh, here's a second and a half of a nurse ghost. Here's the ghost of the guy's kids he set on fire, ?
Here's the people who were...
To me, it felt like a haunted house, but, like, put together by somebody who, like, has no idea of, like, thematic cohesion. So it's just, like, this room has Michael Myers. This next room has a Freddy in it. This next one, it's got, like, a spider lady. You're gonna hate that shit. Like, it's just, like, all over the place. And that's basically what this is. It's just, like, they walk down the stairs, and it's like, ooh, spooky burning children! Then they fall down, and they're like, oh, no, a guy with a weird face! Like, yeah, that's just kind of how it goes.
Oh no, like a 65-year-old woman who appears to have an alcohol addiction, ? Oh my God. But yeah, so the rest of this is just going to be the Pokemon rap version of every ghost they had in season one.
That they could afford to get back, right?
That they could afford to get back, yeah. Which, the ones that did might surprise you. Mm-hmm. Also, they're going to bring back so many people that are just, like, characters and that were played different people in Coven, and it's very, it's awful.
That's very annoying, yeah.
It's so annoying. They picked here's the thing, is they picked all of the seasons where the characters that the alumni were playing were basically the same person. So it's not like James March versus Tate Langdon, because even though they're both Evan Peters, they're so clearly different people. Tate and Kyle from Coven are the same guy. Just one is a zombie and one did a school shooting. Otherwise, they're just the same guy.
Yeah.
I mean, when you phrase it like that, it doesn't sound it. But yeah, no, you're absolutely right. Yeah, exactly. It's the same guy.
And it's like a really extreme version of, like, when I watch Superman, I'm willing to give them the suspension of disbelief that this guy puts on a suit and glasses and everyone goes, oh yeah, that's just Clark.
Yeah.
You know, but like, it feels a little stupid in this show when it's just like, holy shit, you look just like my witch mom.
Right, yeah.
Like, you look just like Cordelia. Do you know that? Like, that would, it just feels a little silly when it's like literally the same person.
Yeah, and Constance and fucking what's her name, Fiona from Coven. Like, she would think that Constance mm-hmm. Langdon was Fiona, like, without question. Like, there would be no question in her mind. She'd be like, holy shit, that's Fiona. We thought she died. Same with Billy Ray Cyrus or whatever her name is.
Yeah, the psychic, yeah.
Yeah. I know you mean, yeah.
She'd just be like, Cordelia, are you fucking with us? Why are you here in a blonde wig? What the fuck's happening? They could have even done, like, cheeky little, like, tongue in cheeks of being like, oh, you remind me of someone I used to know or something. They don't even do that because they are, in about 10 seconds, about to do a tongue in cheek, like, oh, we're very aware of how bad our writing is.
Do you know what?
And it's going to be so painful. It's going to be so painful.
It just hit me that a kids movie from Pixar does shit like this so much better. Do you remember in Ratatouille, there's a brief moment at the beginning when the rats are talking to each other and they show it from the other lady's perspective and they're squeaking just to, like, signal to you, the audience, like, they're not speaking English. You know, it's not like that kind of movie. Yeah. That's what they need here, of just some way of being like, that doesn't really look like Jessica Lange, you know what I mean? Or something. Or at least, yeah, the tongue-in-cheek, like, we know what we're doing. But here, you're just, like, the whole time kind of wondering, like, do they know it looks like Jessica Lange? Or the other, you know what I mean? Like, Fiona or whatever, and it doesn't work. It's like, it's a constant like bother or distraction almost, you know?
But yeah, I feel like Rona tried with like the, we have an actor playing a character that's played by another actor that's playing another character. I feel like they tried to do that, and then they just fucked it up so atrociously that it was completely unintelligible.
Well, and like, In Hotel, I think, when they bring back the psychic but they also had Hypodermic Sally, it's like, it doesn't really matter because it's kind of like a quick one-on thing, even though it's annoying and I didn't like it. But like, here it's like annoying as shit because they're kind of major characters, you know? So it's...
Also, like, at the very least, Hypodermic Sally has this like huge fucked blowout hairstyle that's like reminiscent of, you know, Courtney Love and all that, and she's got her leopard skin jacket on and she looks disheveled and fucked up, and she has like a, well, I guess the psychic has a cigarette in her mouth every scene too, but like, you know, in like it's falling out of her mouth kind of way. Like, there's a clear distinction. If both of those characters were in a room and you asked me to point which one is like the drug lady and which one is like the TV psychic, it would not be hard to figure out, right? Like, you would just look at both of them and be like, yeah, that one's that one, that one's that one. If you put the psychic lady and Cordelia next to each other and ask somebody blind which one's the which one's the TV psychic, they would be wrong every time. Or I guess 50% of the time, because it would just be a guess.
Exactly, yeah.
But. Yeah.
So are we ready to talk about the first person that they meet?
Yeah, I suppose so. So after having a brief spook moment, or you know, getting a little scared up on top of the stairs, they hear Tate and Ben talking in Ben's office. Ben, for anyone who forgot, is the psychiatrist in season one, and Tate is Evan Peters in season one, who did a lot of terrible things that we will get into more depth in next episode for sure, but is not someone who's redeemable. Is like the way I would like to point it. It's just, this is not a redeemable character. Just, if you don't know anything else, this dude's fucking unredeemable.
Also, don't forget,
if you're enjoying this podcast and are interested in supporting us or having access to additional bonus episodes, consider subscribing to our Patreon over at patreon.com/greatandterribleahs. Supporters who pledge $5 or more a month will get access to our monthly Patreon exclusive episode in which we discuss various American Horror Story spinoffs, such as American Horror Stories. Thank you again for listening, and we hope to see you around next week.
That Ben is the worst psychiatrist, like, of all time, even when he was alive and on the show, and nothing that happens here will change that, in this episode anyway. But still, that's right. So let's see here.
So do you guys, you guys being the audience, not the two people in the podcast with me right this moment, because you guys have been recently reminded, do you guys listening at home remember what Ben Harmon's claim to fame was in his season where he survived through all of the episodes until the last one and was, for all intents and purposes, probably considerably the main character of season one? Remember, he was a psychiatrist. He had a mistress who ended up dying. He had a weird little kind of shifty, like, gremlin man with a burned face who kept offering him deals for $5,000. He had a lot of irons in the fire.
He had weird, like, moments where he'd black out and, like, dig a hole in the backyard.
Yeah. That happened, too.
His tragic mate, I was actually, like, drugging him with laudanum.
Yeah, he had a lot of very cool things that happened to him. Do you remember, what do you think out of all those things, the pinnacle of his character arc was that
I know,
he will have to relive over and over again for eternity as a ghost, because that's apparently a thing that happens now.
I know, if I were a teenage fan fiction writer, what I would include, to be a little
and
funny.
What would that be?
Would it be when he looks out the window and masturbates while crying and then gets caught by
a ladder? The literal 1.5 second scene in episode one. You got it, Slow Beef. That is, in fact, his defining characteristic. Ben Harmon did only one thing in season one, and that was jerk off and cry for 1.5 seconds in one frame. And boy, howdy, are the writers of this TV show happy to remind you about it. because like we get like a little passive info dump that like apparently Mrs. Harmon isn't talking to Ben anymore. I think like Tate says something to that effect. And I'm like, the last thing we saw of them is that they had made up and they were like murdering people as a family. Did that
actually,
like not
yeah,
work
you're
out
right.
in season one or what?
Yeah.
Yeah. They ended on like a big like fucking like Munsters reveal yeah. of just like, yeah, we're actually just cool with being ghosts.
We're
now.
Happier
and
dead.
I love to have sex with my ghost wife. Yeah, it's cool.
Yeah. This is what I wanted for my family, thinks Ben Harmon, strangely.
Yeah, that really fixed everything. I guess that didn't work out and she isn't talking to him anymore. And then Violet broke up with Tate for some reason.
I can think of at least two.
Well, yeah, I can think of them too, but those are more so what I would put in the category of reasons you shouldn't have dated him to begin with, because she was aware of them before they started dating. Mm. She's decided, actually, no, it's bad that he's a school shooter and fucked my mom. I think that's bad now, and I don't want to be with him anymore.
I think the worst... The thing that really is the kicker for me, and I don't know if it's the same way for everybody, but I feel like fucking her mom would be one thing, but it's like getting her mom pregnant is like so much worse, I think. And that is what happened, right?
Yeah, that's what happened, all right. While pretending to be her dad. There's a lot wrong.
And the child that he impregnated her with caused her to die in childbirth.
Oh, yeah, you're right, actually, yeah.
Yeah, I think I'd take that a little more personally than she is. I gotta be honest, man. I think I'd be pretty fucking pissed.
Hey, you know what? And by the way, you know what's a fucked up thing not to tell your girlfriend? I'm a fucking ghost. You know, that's what you should probably have revealed on maybe the
maybe
second or third
date. Yeah.
I actually live in your fucking house. I can see everything you're doing. You know, I'm not a great guy. I'll just throw that out there. Not a great guy.
No, I think it's fine.
They have their little therapy meetup, and then Tate storms out, and they're just sitting there hanging out, and then Madison and Behold walk in, and they're like, hey, you need to tell us about Michael Langdon. And there's this really annoying thing where whenever anyone asks about Michael Langdon, everyone in the room like locks up, and there's like kind of a reason for it, but it is also kind of stupid. And Ben just responds when they try to pressure him with like, what are you gonna do? We're already ghosts, man. Like, what are you gonna do? Like, kill me again? Good luck, brother. Everyone's tried. Trust me, everyone's sick of my ass.
Which is crazy. He is like, the ghosts are acknowledging that it's strange that these two are talking to them. So like, clearly something is special about these two. Like they clearly are not regular like people. And what's crazy is in like 20 minutes later into this episode, we're going to find out you can fucking kill ghosts if you know magic. You can just fucking kill ghosts. I guess maybe you do have to have like some divine intervention, maybe, but it could just be magic and you can just kill a ghost, like delete it from existence, which is pretty intense and does scare Ben Harmon because he witnesses it happening. So
why?
For him to be like, hey, you can't kill us twice. I'm not going to listen to you. You're not my dad. It's like, well, you of all people should be afraid that you can get killed again because you know you can get killed again as a ghost.
But like, what are you holding on to, Ben? Like, this is the afterlife you wanted. Like, time to go cry and jerk off again. That's my whole existence. That's my eternity. Are you sure you're not in hell? Yeah. Like, but yeah, sorry.
Yeah, and as they're leaving, Tate hits them with a quick, like, hey, I don't care if you're magic. There's all sorts of magic people who've tried to be in here. You'll still get fucked up. Be careful out there. And it's like, okay, man, I guess helpful taint. Like, by the way, there's going to be some severe taint rehabilitation happening this episode. And it definitely starts here with him just being like, oh, I'm just a silly little guy who wants to do better. Oh, by the way, be safe, Madison. Okay, bye-bye.
Don't ask me what happened on whatever day in 1990 when I died. But it's...
Don't ask me about not Columbine. Yeah. It's definitely not me.
You're not coming here on Halloween, right? And if you do, no, whatever anyone says about me is not true. Just throwing that out there. Okay. They're all liars. So long. All right.
Ben then just goes, I'm busy. I can't help you right now. And Behold's like, how are you busy? You're a ghost. And he's like, I have to go look out my back window over the yard and cry and masturbate like I've been doing every single day for the last bunch of years. And like,
that's not a paraphrase. Is, that's literally what he says.
Yeah. Madison and Behold have no reason to understand like the framing for this or like why that would be a thing.
Right?
So this is the most insanely out of pocket shit for a ghost to say to you. Like, imagine you're like writing your Ouija board and you're talking to somebody and you're like, oh, cool, my Uncle Dave that I haven't spoken with in 30 years. What's good, Dave? And he's just like, must jerk off, and I'm like, is that, wait, who's moving the board? And it's like, oh man, that was Dave.
And cry? Like, yeah. I'm not just a pervert, I'm fucked up.
Like, in a specific spot too. It's like, is that where you died? Did you die jerking off and crying?
Nope.
Out? Like, how did you end up with that as your thing?
That's, I think, what's so confusing is because he does that like to a year before he dies. Like, imagine also, that like a random thing you did a year ago is what you're stuck doing for forever.
Also, the reason he does it, which is at least what I read into it, is this is after Moira kind of tempts him. He walks in on her, like, so much masturbation on this show. You know what I mean? And then he's, like, jerking off in his office crying, because I think he's like, what's wrong with me? How can't I just be faithful to my wife and be a normal person and shit? So here, it's like the writers laughing at their own, like, isn't that scene silly that we wrote? Which is like, you can't do that. That's like... the comedian with the rainbow suspenders, like, what was I thinking wearing this? Like, asshole, you picked it. What were I, you know, you can't use that as a joke. That's yours.
Yeah, motherfucker, you're the only one who knows what you were thinking. We don't. Please explain.
Yeah. It's not a good bit, but they're trying it. Damn it.
So, yeah, they decided that again, that's Ben Harmon's thing. Forget about all the other part. What was the part that got posted on Tumblr the most? Ben Harmon jerking off. So that's what he does. Madison then asks if they should try to help the sad guy, meaning Tate, which is like a wild way to phrase this, Madison. And Behold, after she goes, hey, we should help the sad guy, and Behold reasonably assumes that she's talking about the guy in front of them crying, and he just goes, the tear jerker, which is kind of funny. That is really funny. Clever.
I love
a guy crying and jacking off as a tear jerker. You got me. That's pretty good.
That feels like that was Billy Porter, not the writers. That feels like an ad lib by Billy Porter. Order, if we have to be honest, like,
I would buy that.
Tearjerker's too quippy. They're not that clever. They're not clever enough to have come up with tearjerker, I don't think.
Or they came up with it and they're like, that's too good. We have to include it. And so much so that we're going to reference it without too much more else. Hope you watch season one. Otherwise, you have no idea why the hell they're talking about this. But anyway.
Yeah. So, after they, say no, or, like, maybe we'll go help Tate or whatever, they walk down the stairs, and a red ball rolls down the stairs. Whoa! Which, again, this is just, like, real haunted house bullshit of just, like, now you get scared by this guy from season one, and now you get scared by this little lady. Now you get scared by this guy.
Now you get spear-tackled.
So Madison picks up the red ball and goes like, what the heck? And out of nowhere, fucking Bo, who was a character with just like a bunch of like different deformities and whatnot and disabilities and et cetera, just comes and spear tackles Madison out of nowhere, which again, like, not really what his thing was, I don't think.
No.
No.
Maybe I don't remember it right, but I remember him mostly, like, being in the back of the room in the dark, and he was mostly scary by way of being misunderstood as opposed to being an actual physical monster. Like, it was somebody who was very sad.
He felt, like, kind of redundant with Infantata, which I forgot. I was like, you know, what, except Infantata is just a monster, you know? So, but, yeah, so... I don't know. And we, anyway, Bo's here is the point. And I think it was one of Constance's kids, right, too? Was that his thing?
Yeah. And we're going to meet another Constance kid later that didn't fucking exist in season one. And I'm going to have so many fucking questions. And they're like, doesn't matter. You get to see her for 1 second. Goodbye. Even though it will never be mentioned again. Like, insane. Them to drop DLC for season one.
Right? I thought I was forgetting. Thank you for confirming that I wasn't, like, crazy. But, like...
No.
Yeah. Luckily, I saw it, and, like, her major defining characteristic, I was just like... I would have remembered that.
Yeah.
I would definitely remember if they either had like a child with that CG effect going on, or if they had a child like walking around with a blindfold over her eyes like fucking Zatoichi. I'd remember if there was a tiny Zatoichi lass. You can't sneak that past me. After Bo tackles and Madison gets up and all that, Sarah Paulson, not as Cordelia, but as Billy Dean Howard, who was, as Madison will put it, shitty Miss Cleo, is just in the house, I guess. Like, she just happens to be here today, which is like, sure, man, why not? Why not? and everyone, like, has this reaction of just like, wait, what are you doing here? Wait, you're not dead. What the heck? And Billy Dean's just like, yeah, I'm pretty cool. The ghosts don't get mad at me. I can just come in and leave whenever I want, which like, is that really, that's the requirement? Because it seems like a lot of people just died for like no discernible reason.
Yeah.
I don't know if that works.
Also, why? Why are the ghosts cool with Billy Dean Howard? She like never interacted with them and like also, can't provide them with anything.
Why did they bring this character back twice? Like, once in hotel and then once here? Like, what, you know what I mean? Like, why are we doing this? Like, I didn't think she was that interesting in hotel or in Murder House, but she keep...
Oh, you mean the character that other characters in the show summarize as being a knockoff of a real person?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know if we needed her back three times.
Yeah, not particularly interesting. Out of all of the, like, I would say the Rolodex of Sarah Paulson's American Horror Story characters, Billy Dean Howard, which is crazy because she's a fucking psychic and you would think that that would buy her some more interest points.
Right?
No, she's like at the bottom. I don't know if she's the worst, but she's definitely like bottom three, if you ask me.
Agree.
Yeah, they have her do this like, like respectable TV host kind of personality, but like she secretly like smokes and is like kind of hard or whatever, but it just isn't really an interesting character.
No,
honestly.
Yeah.
Like there's just like not a lot going on. That exact level of competence where I don't expect her to like fuck up in an interesting way, but I don't expect her to do anything cool either, you know?
Right.
Not like a great place for a character to be. So, yeah, apparently Billy Dean, like, everyone's just cool with her. All the ghosts are. She recognizes that Madison is a witch. So, apparently, being a medium means you can detect witches. Didn't know
it's
that was
passive.
Part and parcel with the package.
Yeah, it's a passive ability. Yeah. She classed differently.
So, yeah, she just, like, detects that they're witches. And... doesn't have like a bigger response to that, which seems crazy. Like if I was like a medium, if I met like someone who could like shoot fire from their hands, I'd be like, whoa, what's up with that? But yeah, so Billy Dean shows up, and I'll be honest, I don't remember if she shows up in the rest of the episode at all.
I don't think she does, now that you say
like
it.
Like one time, she shows up like in the middle of another conversation happening to be like, you shouldn't do that, Stinky, and then like leaves.
Okay.
Yeah.
That
damn, why'd they bring her back? Now I'm like even more confused in retrospect. Like, why did you show up? What are you doing here? You were already in this season as someone else. Like, did you have a minimum requirement to be in every episode? What the fuck? So, after this, they have their meeting with like, wow, you're Billy Dean Howard. How about that? Then Constance Langdon just like slowly walks down the stairs. And everyone around her goes, oh, who are you? And she goes, that's funny, because you're in my house, which
No, you're not.
It's sure. not her house. It's never been her house. She wanted it to be her. She was jealous of, like, the house, but I don't... Yeah, whatever.
There's a realtor we talked to at the start of the episode. It's very clearly not her house, but... Yeah.
It was never... That's, I think, the most important thing to emphasize is that, like, it's not like at some point they'll explain that she purchased the house. There's just not a narrative device that explains why she would say this, because not even metaphorically does she own that house. Like, she knew she knew she wasn't, like, welcome there for most of the last or the season she was in. Like, it's never been her. She lives next door.
Yeah, she's not in control of any of the ghosts there or anything. You know what I mean? Like, they could just kill her if they wanted to, which she is dead here, but I don't think she...
I want to say explicitly they don't kill her. They hate her, right. But they hate her so much they don't kill her because they don't want her to be there forever.
Yeah. That makes sense.
They literally hated her so much they didn't want to kill her. And for the ghosts in fucking American Horror Story to not want to kill somebody... me is like a monumental Herculean task.
Right.
So that means that they fucking hated her ass because they were not willing to kill her. Because ghosts in this show fucking love doing murder for some reason. I guess when you're dead, you just love fucking people up, I guess.
They do. And it's even when it's like not beneficial to you, sometimes they do. Yeah. Somehow she survived the plot hole of they probably should have killed her by accident just because they keep doing that. Anyway.
So they gather up with Constance, and Constance says a really weird off-kilter, like, sort of racist that means well thing, which, like, thanks for reminding me the character was like that. I definitely needed that reminder. Thanks. I appreciate it. I was worried I was going to get to watch a whole episode of TV without someone being a weird racist. So thanks for nipping that in the bud.
That's how we know she's not Fiona, in case we were, like, confused about, like, oh, is that just Fiona? Because it looks and acts like Fiona. Yeah. They were like, no, remember, Fiona wasn't racist.
She voted for Obama. Things,
she just hated jazz musicians. Yeah. Yeah.
But she wasn't racist.
And then they're just talking a little bit, not saying a whole lot, just trying to ask about Michael and kind of getting a no, not gonna tell you about Michael, no. And then she's like, well, I have to go deal with some stuff. And Moira had just claimed to have cleaned the room all the way. As Moira and Constance, like, leave the room, this is the one scene where Billy Dean goes, nah, she's not coming back soon. Which, like, yeah, I think they would have parsed that. The ghosts are not doing normal things after the guy upstairs was crying and jerking off, like, as part of a routine. Like, I think they'd piece together that, like, sometimes the ghosts do weird shit because they are compelled to.
Right.
And so after they go in there and... Constance takes her fingertip across one of the like fireplaces or whatever, and just has dust on her finger and starts, like, doing a big ramble about, you know what this is? It's not dust. It's my disappointment. It's my wonder belief of wonderment and all. And Moira literally says, like, we're in the eternal afterlife. You can hurry this the fuck up. We don't need this whole song and dance every goddamn time, which is, like, strange for ghosts to be able to say, because then that makes me think, like, Ben Harmon would be able to whip his dick out and be like, you know what? I'm just going to enjoy myself. I'm just going to have fun this time. No crying. I'm done with this crying shit. I'm just going to jack off. Like, it seems like that's, like, way too easy of an out if the ghosts are able to recognize they are in a loop and go, I'm over this. Also makes Misty Day look really fucking stupid. Like, she already looked kind of stupid in hell, but now she looks really stupid.
Well, she wasn't a ghost in hell.
The ghosts that are, like, fundamentally trapped. Well, yeah, but they're, like, ghosts being locked into routine by spirits or by, I don't know, Hell House or some shit. And even they're just like, I don't know, it's kind of nonsense how I gotta, like, jerk off every day. But, hey, you know, it is what it is.
See, my theory is that is not, in fact, Ben Harmon's compulsion. He just got caught doing it again. And was like, oh, the house. Ooh, ouch, the house is making me do it.
The house is making me jack off. Oh,
I just clock in, jerk off, cry, clock out. That's my eternity.
my wife crying, my car crying. That's how I got everything. Now get the fuck out of my office.
But now I do it at home, COVID edition. All right, anyway, sorry, yeah.
Yeah, this dude was ready for the work from home transition immediately. So after they have this little back and forth, Moira hits Constance with a, yeah, whatever. Constance is like, oh, isn't your purpose to be a maid forever? Can you at least do that decently? And Moira's like, actually, my eternal purpose is to fuck your husband in the basement.
Hell
and I'm
yeah.
going to go do that again.
Hell
P.S.
Yeah.
The way you killed yourself was lame. It's like,
hell yeah.
It's weirdly like the most I've been like, okay, Moira did not have this much character in season one. Like, I'm for it and she should have. This is just not how Moira was though at all.
Right.
Like, this is crazy.
And she won't be for the rest of the episode, just so we're clear, because we will get a Moira arc. They just wanted her to be nasty for these like 2 seconds and it kicks ass.
Yeah. And we should slam through the Moira arc because I can think of nothing that is going to contribute less than this, and I'm more positive of that than anything I have ever said in my life.
You know,
this
yeah.
arc is not going to do anything. It's not going to help anyone. It's going to develop no characters afterwards. So Madison asks to learn more about Michael Langdon. Is like, Constance, you got to tell me. And Constance keeps going, no, I don't want to. And Billy also has that reaction too, which it's like, you're not a ghost. Shut up. And Constance is like, I know more about Michael than anyone, but I won't tell you unless you do something for me. And then they ask like, okay, what do you want us to do? Like, get rid of Moira. I'm so sick of this lady. Get her out of here. Which they're kind of like, yeah, all right, whatever. And then Madison is just like, so it cuts to them outside, trying to dig up the riddle of Luigi's bones and trying to find the bones that are correct. Behold is outside, like he's like 6 feet deep in a hole, by the way, which I don't know if anyone else in this call has had to dig a hole that's like that deep with a shovel. That's like a multi-hour activity. That's not like something you just like knock out real quick. And Madison's just standing at the top of the hole and Behold hands her up a skull and she kind of looks at it real quick and is like, no, the vibrations on this skull are all wrong. And I'm like, I mean, also, like, Moira was, like a smaller lady, so, like, that'd be pretty easy to just pick up and be like, yeah, this is, like, a big-ass head. This probably isn't right. And, yeah, they're just digging up skulls or whatever. And Behold, after, like, digging up a little more, he's like, this is stupid. There are so many corpses in this yard. What the fuck? I know a spell that will bind her to a closet. And I was like, is that a, like, putting someone in the closet joke, or is that just like a spell? Like, I was unclear on whether or not this was a trapping someone in the closet joke, but whatever, man. Whatever. So after he says that, she just like doesn't even respond. Like, Madison doesn't even pay it any bit of mind. And then they walk inside and now they just have it. They have Moira's bones.
Yep.
They go inside and they talk to Moira and they hold up a bag and they're like, yep, it's your bones. And Moira's like, oh my God, my bones. Yay! I can't believe you found my bones. I needed my bones so bad. This is all I've ever wanted is my bones. And they're like, all right, cool. Where do you want us to put your bones? Which, like, honestly, very kind of them, because they could absolutely just like put him in the sewer.
Right.
Be like, you're a sewer ghost now. Enjoy floating free. But they take her request and she's like, I want to be buried next to my mother, which sure, I get. Was that a thing, that character? Whatever.
I vaguely recall that.
I think
that.
she cared about her mother, but it wasn't like, yeah.
Yeah, we didn't get it. Yeah.
So they do it and Moira's like crying and happy and all that. They honor and bury her next to her mother. And yeah, Madison makes like a little offhand comment of just like, I know where I'd want to be buried. There's like this one studio where there's always crazy shit happening, and I think it would be sick as hell to haunt that place. And then later on, it's like, also, that's where I got assaulted. And I'm like, whoa, those are two different things. That's great. Like, that just being like, yeah, I love this club, man. They have like the sickest raves. Like, it's always full of hot people. It's like cool as hell. The music's banging. And also, I got assaulted there. It's like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Those are opposites. What the fuck? What the fuck, Madison?
You need to see a non-Ben Harmon psychiatrist, probably. But, you know.
Yeah. He'll just be like, you're not going to believe what I found out. It's called tear jerking. It's the new wave. I feel so much better. So they leave, and then we get to see a very touching scene about Moira, which... hey, I wasn't really connected to the fandom at this point in time, nor am I currently. Was there like a big demand for Moira from season one to get closure?
I mean,
I think a couple people, I do actually remember people being like upset that Moira, her like storyline never really went anywhere. Like, she just gets fucked over by Constance and then like gets a very, not dreadful, but like a kind of hopeless ending. And I think I do remember people being actively like not happy with that, how her character arc ended.
So seven seasons later, they were like, we got to fix that.
Yeah.
we got to do something about that. They bury Moira there, and we see Moira at the grave. And then, Moira's mom's ghost shows up, who's like even older than Moira is. And like, man, all I'm learning is like, I should have got shot in the head when I was 21. Apparently.
This would have been.
Apparently, that's the fucking play. If you die as a grandma, it sucks to be you, I guess. You get to spend eternity grandma mode. Like, hope you like knitting, asshole.
Frances Conroy is definitely the better actress just by the award she's won and stuff. But, like, this would have been much more sensical as, like, the young hot version of Moira, even though we never get an explanation as to why they're. You know what I mean? Like. So, but for some reason, it's Frances Conroy, who is, like, already, like, not old, but, you know, she's aged a bit. And, like, they have to find this, like, even older lady.
Well, and they're, like, not doing her any favors with, like, makeup and clothing and stuff, too.
Yeah.
Like, they're trying to make her look like an old maid. Like, that's like, not... That's intentional by the costuming team.
Yeah, exactly. But now they need to have her mom there, who, like... Also, it's Ghost World. The mom could be young. There's no reason, but here we are. Whatever. Anyway. But we get our satisfying Moira ending, you know, emotional stuff. And I want to say one and only one thing about this. Your first time watching the season, you'll be like, great, and probably forget about this. All I'm going to say is keep it in mind as with this podcast and season continues. That's it. Just like in the back of your pocket, like Moira has a happy...
Yeah, just remember that, like, if this was a visual novel... We did get a good end for this character.
Yes, exactly right.
And we had to earn it over the course of seven seasons, Just keep that in mind.
I guess we should clarify. The good ending is she gets reunited with her mother and is, like, having a little bit of time crying and, like, catching up and stuff. And then she's like, hey, by the way, I have to admit something. I killed you.
Yeah.
I was the person who pulled the plug on your machine when you were, like, in intensive care and like not able to respond and all that stuff. Like, truly one of the more reasonable times to cut life support, right? Like, it sounds like it's like something that Moira should have worked through with like a therapist, maybe, as opposed to needing to see. If only she was in a house with a therapist for an eternity.
A good
but
one,
like,
yeah, right.
not that chuckle fuck. So, she just like admits, she's like, yeah, I pulled the plug when you were in like the super intense care hospice and like not responding and stuff, and I still just feel very guilty about it. And then her mom's like, it's cool. I was like having a bad time and wanted to leave, and you let me leave. So like, thanks, actually. And then that's it.
Yeah.
And Moira's like, oh, so you weren't mad? And she's like, no, I wasn't really mad or upset at all. And she's like, oh, huh, maybe I should have stayed at that house.
Oh, man.
Really? That's it? Oh, damn. Okay. I thought there'd be like more to this.
No, but yeah, you know what? And in season one, though, she was always big on finding her bones and moving on. So happy ending for Moira. Keep it in mind.
Yeah. Congratulations. Yep. We've solved the riddle of Moira's bones.
Yes. Yay. And,
this will help us beat Michael. That we took an aside to do more Moira world building. Well, anyway, this season's apocalypse, fucking allegedly. This might be the deepest in allegedly I felt with this season, because we're like in a flashback visiting the set of another season with a different
flashback
cast.
Of a ghost, and like flashback of a ghost, it's a ghost come flashback
on, bro, what are we doing here? Flashback of a ghost. Ghost closure, like what are we doing?
And there's so much episode left. There's so much episode left.
Yeah.
Yeah, this, so we haven't really gotten to the bad part of this episode, and like, Jesus Christ, oh man. So we're gonna find out that Constance is like, just really badly written when she was off screen. Like, they just like forgot what her character did.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for listening. I hope you've enjoyed part one of Return to Murder House in the middle of Apocalypse, which is a season that already changed one time. Yeah.
Yay.
And I hope to see you around for the second half of it next time. Thank you for listening.
So long, everybody.
Bye.